Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Yes, We Can, Education Award, Sheldon Turner, Sr. Someone to help them see the big picture. Turner used own struggles to shape school programs. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. For teens who need hope and help setting solid goals in life, Sheldon Turner Sr. is there. That's Sheldon, S-H-E-L-D-O-N, Turner Sr. I always tell them, focus, 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 Turner said. They have so many obstacles, so many things pulling them in all directions, and to have someone to help them see the big picture is great. Turner, the Career Services Placement Liaison for Champaign Schools, will be honored by NAACP Champaign County with one of two Yes We Can Education Awards at the organization's annual Freedom Fund banquet on Friday. Turner leads two programs the school district offers in cooperation with the City of Champaign and other community organizations. One is Operation Hope, an 11-year-old program that encourages high school students to embrace positive activities and relationships and graduate with a post-secondary plan. The other is a newer program called Goal Getters, aimed at helping high school students who are facing more than their share of life challenges. A 43-year-old father of two sons, Turner remembers what it was like to be facing some challenges himself when he was younger. Born and raised in East St. Louis in a family of seven kids, Turner came to Champaign to live with one of his brothers after high school to help him stay out of trouble, he said. It was a pretty good, safe place to be, he recalled. He began taking classes at Parkland College, but wasn't entirely clear what he'd like to do for a living. He tried several jobs, among them restaurant work, and following in his dad's footsteps to do factory work. For a time, Turner worked at the craft plant in Champaign, but he also had memories of doing something else while he was still in high school that he really enjoyed and found rewarding, coaching flag football for kids. I remember how it felt to be working with those kids, he said. Turner took a pay cut and went to work as a hall monitor at Jefferson Middle School and enjoyed the job, he said. From there, he went to work for the school district dealing with kids who are truant. We wanted to see what was causing them to not like school, he recalled. We found a lot of it was they really didn't see the bigger picture. Operation Hope focuses on four E words: education, experience, engagement, and exposure, Turner said. That's exposure as in chances to visit colleges and explore careers, experience in community service, and engagement in activities that are positive. Those things are what bring hope, Turner said. I know my identity. Goal Getters, which offers leadership and development training, started last year targeting young Black males. In this program, teens learn about conflict resolution, financial literacy, how to deal with police, and the importance of not being part of a gang and not using a gun, Turner said. Members of Goal Getters say a pledge at each meeting, and Turner said he asks members he runs into to recite it to him to make sure they still know it. The pledge is, I am the hope of the future. I am educated. I know my identity. I am a leader, not a follower. I am responsible, and I will honor those who have paved the way to my success, Turner said. He sees a need for Goal Getters and Operation Hope in other communities, and it's a goal of his to make that happen. All those things that I struggled with when I was trying to figure out what I was trying to do in life went into these two programs, Turner said. Been there, done that. Champaign County NAACP President Minnie Pearson said she's attended church with Turner, knows both his children, and has seen him do wonderful work in the community. He has touched the lives of some pretty decent young men, and they have gone on to be students at Parkland, she said. Turner has also been showing young men that he can both talk the talk and walk the walk, Pearson said. He's not asking them to do anything that he hasn't done himself, she said. And here are a few bio bits about Sheldon Turner Sr. He lives in Urbana. He enjoys travel, spending time with friends and family, basketball, and football. In addition to his work for Champaign Schools, he is also a basketball referee for high school and college women's teams. And honor roll. Leading up to Friday's banquet in Champaign, we'll introduce you to the community leaders and programs that were chosen for NAACP Freedom Fund Awards. Yes We Can Education Awards, Sheldon Turner Sr., Goal Getters, and Wayne Turner, Boys to Men Mentoring. Freedom Fighter Voter Registration Award, Linda Ruth Turnbull. President's Award, the Reverend Florence Kaplow of Unitarian Universalist Church of Champaign-Urbana. And Economic Development Award, that one goes to David Northern, Housing Authority of Champaign County, featured in Getting Personal in the October 6th edition of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Illinois Commerce Commission, introducing a new area code, 447. Due to shortage in remaining 217 numbers, this article is written by Ben Zichterman and is based out of Champaign. Beginning in 2021, new numbers in the 217 area code could get a new code, 447. Due to a shortage of remaining 217 phone numbers, carriers will start being assigned parts of the 447 area code, which covers the same geographical area, beginning on March 29, 2021. It may be years before you even see a 447 number, said George Light, an engineering analyst with the Illinois Commerce Commission. The 217 area code covers 36 counties in Illinois and includes Champaign, Urbana, Danville, Decatur, Springfield, and Quincy. It was one of the original 86 area codes in the country when Bell Labs assigned it in 1947. But the 217 code is running out of numbers as the last prefix, the three numbers following the area code, have been assigned. If there's more demand, there's no more prefixes to give them, Light said. People who already have a 217 number will keep their number, but they'll have to start dialing the 10-digit number with the area code even for local numbers. From August 29th, 2020 to February 27th, 2021, customers will be able to dial either the 7 or 10-digit number. After that, the 10-digit number will be mandatory. The next headline reads, Illini win against Wisconsin. Security. Festivities were incident-free. This article is written by Ben Zichterman and is based out of Champaign. When James McCourt's kick sailed through the uprights and hundreds of fans stormed the field to celebrate on Saturday, campus police had three priorities: protect the coaches, protect the referees, and protect those Memorial Stadium goalposts. Years ago in the 80s, they used to rip them down, Deputy Chief Matt Myrick said. Really, the priority is that no one goes up and climbs on them, falls, and hurts themselves. Other than that, McCourt's teammates telling the Illini kicker he appeared to temporarily lose consciousness in the post-game player pylon. Saturday's celebration was incident-free, said Myrick, who, as head of the football game day security, watched Saturday's thriller from a command post near the top of Memorial Stadium. From the command post, everybody just seemed like they were happy, he said. I didn't notice or see any problems at all. Prior to Saturday's 24-23 shocker win against number 6 Wisconsin, it had been years since an Illini football team pulled off a win so unexpected that guarding the goalposts would even come into play. But keeping fans from coaches and officials on both sides is an every week priority, Myrick said. A lot of visiting teams bring officers with them, too, he said. We want to make sure the visiting teams and refs can get off the field as soon as possible. No issues were reported on either end, he said, and when the PA announcer eventually asked fans to leave the field, they did. Some college conferences, including the SEC and Big 12, ban rushing the court or the field and use fines as a deterrent. But the Big Ten and U of I don't. Illinois fans last came flooding out of their seats in February when Brad Underwood's basketball Illini knocked off Michigan State at State Farm Center. There was no bad behavior reported on that night either. Everybody was obviously really excited about Saturday's win, Myrick said. Everybody was in such a good mood. The fans did great. The next headline reads, University of Illinois, student government, measure calls on Jones to retract email, apologize, vote on resolution set for Wednesday. This article is written by Julie Wirth and is based out of Urbana. The fallout from a University of Illinois mass email on anti-Semitism continues, with the Illinois student government set to vote on a resolution this week, calling on Chancellor Robert Jones to retract his original email. The resolution, which says the chancellor erred in equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, has itself become a flashpoint, with some Jewish groups objecting to its attempts to define anti-Semitism. The measure stems from an October 9th mass email denouncing anti-Semitism and apologizing for a controversial presentation about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict made to residence hall advisors that Jones sent after another swastika was found on campus. His statement was applauded by local rabbis, Jewish groups on the campus, and their supporters who said it was overdue. But echoing complaints from Palestinian students, the student government resolution says the email improperly characterized the presentation as anti-Semitic and equated it with the image of a swastika, a hated Nazi symbol that literally and violently threatens Jewish people around the world. The resolution draws a distinction between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism using definitions from the Oxford English Dictionary. It says a false equivalence between the two has been used as a scare tactic against those advocating for Palestine. It also criticizes U of I administrators for failing to speak out about other anti-Semitic and white supremacist behavior on campus. The resolution calls for Jones to retract the email and apologize to students referenced in it. But some Jewish students argue that the definition in the resolution is too simplistic and they should have been consulted. It's the right of the Jewish students here and the Jewish community here to define what makes us feel unsafe on campus, said U of I sophomore Ian Katznelson, a student senator and executive board member from the pro-Israel group Illini PAC. Katznelson said he is the only Jewish student in Illinois student government, but he was not consulted by the authors. He said he's talked with students and staff at Illini Hillel and Illini Chabad and with other Jewish student groups, and the sponsors of the resolution never reached out to any mainstream Jewish voice or perspective about this resolution. But co-author Bugra Sahin said he did get input from members of Jewish Voices for Peace, as well as other Jewish students. He said some were afraid to put their names on the resolution. Sahin, that's S-A-H-I-N, also noted that the definitions came straight out of the dictionary. It defines Zionism as a political stance whose object is the assured settlement of Jewish people's race upon a national basis in Palestine. Anti-Semitism is defined as prejudice, hostility, or discrimination toward Jewish people. Hateful ideology. Katznelson and others prefer the definition used by the International Holocaust Remembrance Association, which is used by the U.S. State Department, though not officially enshrined in U.S. law. It reads, anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred toward Jews. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. It's comprehensive and includes specific examples covering the events that make Jewish students feel unsafe on their campus, Katznelson said. Examples include accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel, claiming that the existence of Israel is racist, or comparing Israel policies to those of the Nazis. A Jewish studies scholar said last week that that definition is too broad, and in countries where it's been adopted, has silenced the voices of Palestinian students on college campuses who are critical of Israel. The authors of the resolution wanted to protect the rights of U of I students to take a political stance and express their opinions, Sahin said. This creates a really unsafe environment when you conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, he said, noting that rhetoric on the issue gets heated and Palestinian students have been harassed for their views. Nobody wants to be associated with a hateful ideology, he added. Sahin said the chancellor should have waited to send out the mass email until after he had completed an investigation of the incident. Students for Justice in Palestine had made similar arguments last week. They demanded that a new mass email be sent addressing their concerns, in addition to the establishment of a Middle East North African cultural house, racism and bias training for housing staff, and the hiring of more Palestinian faculty. About 30 protesters at Friday's homecoming parade also called on the chancellor to resign. Our own voice. At a faculty meeting last week, Jones clarified the details of the incident, saying the problem wasn't with the original presentation made on September 23rd by a Palestinian-American student, but another one 2 days later by another student who had heard it and decided to share it without the proper context. During the second presentation, he said, some things were said that were highly inappropriate that really created an unsafe environment, but he also called some of the slides problematic. The student government resolution was debated in an emotional meeting last week. It will be taken up by the group's Committee on Diversity and Inclusion Wednesday evening before it's voted on by the full group later that night. Katz Nelson and Daniel Rabe, RAAB, who is also, or I'm sorry, that's probably Rab, RAAB, I apologize for any mispronunciation, who is also an executive board member for Illini PAC, said they're not willing to compromise on the definition and plan to be at Wednesday's meeting to make their point. You're not allowed to define another group's oppression to fit a political agenda, Rab said. We want to have our own voice on this. Both sides believe the measure has enough votes to pass. Meanwhile, Katz Nelson and others have started a public campaign to show their appreciation for Jones's condemnation of anti-Semitism on campus and hope to meet with the chancellor. And now let's look at our weather forecast over the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Solier and his column on the weather front. Yet another impressive storm system will reach Lake Superior today. Showers and thunderstorms along its trailing cold front will clear the Atlantic seaboard by midweek. Showers will return across the east by later tomorrow. Before the storm moves into Canada, additional precipitation across the upper Midwest could reach 1 to 2 inches. 5-day totals could also reach 1 to 2 inches or more across the eastern one-third of the U.S., with the highest amounts expected in the central Gulf Coast and Northeast. Elsewhere, showers from the Pacific Northwest to the Northern Rockies will diminish by midweek. The 6 to 10-day outlook calls for near or below normal temperatures nationwide. Today, 56 degrees. Windy and cooler, becoming mostly cloudy. A sprinkle or two afternoon. West wind 20 to 30 miles per hour, gusty. Chance of rain is at 20%. Overnight, clearing, colder. Wednesday, the high will be 64, the low will be 38. Mostly sunny, milder, southwest wind, 12 to 18 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, increasing clouds. Thursday, the high is 58, the low will be 46. Mostly cloudy, cooler, a little rain in spots late. Chance of rain is at 30%. Friday, the high is 54, the low will be 39. It will be partly sunny and cool. Saturday, the high is 59, the low is 34. Partly cloudy, Illini game time at West Lafayette, Indiana. Some sunshine, east wind, 7 miles per hour, gusty. Kickoff temperature will be at 53 degrees. Now, the next article, his headline is Television Special. Weather Channel wades into climate debate. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of New York. The Weather Channel is moving beyond cold fronts and heat waves to wade into the politics of climate change with a special planned for early next month that includes interviews with 9 presidential candidates on the topic. The campaign's most prominent climate change skeptic, President Donald Trump, declined an invitation to participate. The hour-long special, scheduled to debut November 7th, interviews candidates at various sites chosen to illustrate the impact of climate change. Senator Bernie Sanders, for example, speaks at the site of a devastating California wildfire, and Senator Kamala Harris along a flood-prone area of the Mississippi River. The Weather Channel has done specials on the impact of climate change in Alaska and along the Louisiana coast, for example, but this is the first time the network has gotten involved directly in a political campaign. It gets the conversation going in a big way, said Rick Nabb, the network's on-air hurricane expert and former director of the National Hurricane Center. He and meteorologist Stephanie Abrams traded off on the interviews. The Weather Channel wanted to do the special through its own scientific lens, said Nora Zimmet, the network's senior vice president for content and programming. Although other networks inquired about joining and doing a town hall-style event, TWC turned them down. And now, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. Remarkably, Martin O'Donnell had a voice when he showed up for work on Monday. The radio analyst for Illinois football gave his lungs a serious workout after James McCourt's field goal beat Wisconsin on Saturday. As voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart described the chaotic, happy scene unfolding on Zupke Field. O'Donnell hollered like, well, a former Illini who couldn't believe his eyes. His eruption started along the lines of, let's go, and went from there. Incredibly joyous and impossible to transcribe. I've been saving it up a little bit, O'Donnell said Sunday night. The classic call played out on ESPN on Saturday night. Hear it for yourself at our website and at the tail end of today's radio replay, which starts at 6 p.m. on WHMS 97.5 FM and WDWS 1400 AM. The last 3 minutes of the game, I felt like I was going to throw up, O'Donnell said, knowing how much the guys have been through, knowing how important this was to them. I was just pumped up, so excited we won. You think? Brian's the pro, he said. I just try not to swear. History. Now let's take a look at area history. In 1919, the University of Illinois Department of Military received a shipment of French 75s, which were field guns used as a quick-firing field artillery piece. In 1969, on his way to present a talk on narcotics, Special Investigator Joe Brown of the Champaign County Sheriff's Office picked up two Chicago men who had harvested 55 pounds of marijuana leaves in rural Champaign County. In 2004, incumbent Peggy Johnson was being challenged in November for her position as Vermilion County coroner by a full-time emergency medical technician. Johnson, 52, of Danville, was appointed coroner in 1999 and was elected to her first four-year term in November 2000. She was being challenged by Raymond S. Skidmore, 32, of Tilton, who was a full-time EMT in Georgetown and a volunteer firefighter and EMT in Tilton. In international history, today's highlight, on October 22, 1962, in a nationally broadcast address, President John F. Kennedy revealed the presence of Soviet-built missile bases under construction in Cuba and announced a quarantine of all offensive military equipment being shipped to the communist island nation. Also on this date in 1986, President Reagan signed into law sweeping tax overhaul legislation. The next headline reads, Major Impact. And it's not really a headline so much as a photo. And in the paper, there's a photo of the back of a boy's head and body and a woman hugging him, her eyes closed. She's giving him a squeeze. She has glasses and short brown hair, and she's holding a rose in her right hand as she hugs him. What's cool in school? Freshman teacher Caitlin Vanderbeek, Wright, hugs Rowan Mandon after he selected her as his special educator and gave her a rose during the Champaign Central High School Academic Letter Awards program at the school in Champaign on Monday. Central and Centennial have used the banquet to recognize students and selected educators for more than 25 years. It is great when students think widely about their educator, Central Principal Joe Williams said. Sometimes it is a teacher at Central. Sometimes it is a teacher from another school. Sometimes it isn't an official teacher, but rather someone who impacted their education in a significant way. And also, as a follow-up to the Yes We Can Education Award article that I first read, I also wanted to say that there's a nice picture on the top of the front page of the newspaper of Sheldon Turner Sr. talking about his goal setters program at a Champaign School District office. So it's just a nice picture of him talking in his chair in his office to Deborah Pressey, the reporter for that article. And now the next headline. The next headline reads, Urbana City Council, zoning requests rejected. This article is written by Alberto Toledo and is based out of Urbana. A garage illegally converted into apartments that once housed three graduate students in West Urbana will no longer be allowed to house anyone after aldermen voted down two major zoning variances Monday night. The request came from real estate agent Dan Gordon, who bought the property in 2018 from previous owners who, along with converting the garage into three apartments, had also hooked it up to plumbing and electricity without permits or city approval and built an addition that didn't comply with city rules. The first variance would have changed the setback from 10 feet to 3 and was defeated 7-1. The second, which would have allowed the garage to remain as a single one-bedroom apartment, was defeated in a 4-3 vote. Esther Patt, P-A-T-T, who lives in West Urbana and is president of the Champaign-Urbana Tenants Union, called on the council to defeat the variances due to what she called flagrant violations of the law, quote-unquote. I'm truly shocked that this administration, the staff, would say that unlawful behavior is the special circumstance that justifies these variances, Patt said. Do you really want to set a standard that illegal use for profit satisfies the variance rules? Unlawful behavior should be punished, not rewarded. Like Patt, Alderwoman Cherise Hersey was clear in her opposition to the variances under the pretense that illegal means just that. I can't get past the words illegal and realtor, Hersey said. I do not understand. Unless this gentleman bought it unseen, how did he not realize the garage was not a garage? I find it hard to believe he didn't know it wasn't up to code. During questions, Gordon said he had the house inspected and nothing was found, and it was his impression when buying the home that the apartments were allowed. But Alderwoman Mary Alice Wu pressed Gordon on how a professional inspector could have missed that the structure was not compliant with city and state code. I'm shocked to learn you had a professional person come and look at your property and say it was okay if there were so many code violations, Wu told Gordon. Did they tell you it was in violation? Gordon said he did not recall before a city staff member stepped in to say the city was not aware about the noncompliance until approached by Gordon. Alderman Bill Brown didn't blame Gordon but supported defeating the plan because it would set a precedent despite what city staff said otherwise. It's amazing this got as far as it did, Brown said. We saw three conditional use permits in the Zoning Board of Approvals not long ago, and later, all of a sudden, we had a text amendment proposal to allow those uses by right. All of a sudden, staff say this is the way development is occurring, so let's just pass it. So it does set a precedent. Alderman Eric Jacobson, who supported the variances, said he was troubled by the attacks on Gordon's integrity and did not have a problem with extending the variances for an already existing structure. I can easily see anyone walking into this in the way you did, Jacobson told Gordon. I think that converting this from three apartments to one is all right. I don't think it creates a precedent for anything else. We're just in this case inviting appropriate investment into the neighborhood. Gordon said he already took 50% cuts to his profit from this property and was not happy about the vote Monday. But Patt was happy with the result. When it's income property for a landlord, then they want to get retroactive approval? Patt asked. It's that line. Don't ask for permission. Ask for forgiveness. No. There is no forgiveness. It is the owner's responsibility to find things out. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. I'll return shortly with the reading of part two. Please stay with me. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.